flooding in the River Murray could cause shacks to be inundated in the coming weeks, with authorities urging residents to be prepared. We're expecting flows of at least 165 gigalitres a day to enter the river in SA at the border by December. That's a number which could climb higher. Joining me in studio to discuss is a couple of local Liberal members, Tony Passon, Federal Member for Barker, and Adrian Pederick, State Member for Hammond. Welcome to you both.
Morning, Jenny.
Good morning.
It's an extraordinary amount of water flowing down. Tony, you've just been up in the Riverland. How's it all looking?
Well, it's looking ominous, to be fair. I was at Lock 5, just outside of Renmark, and we're currently receiving 90,000 megalitres a day across that that infrastructure, and we would normally expect about 6 to 7 at this time of year. To hear those numbers, 165, means that we're very much locking in a 1974 event, which is probably the second or third highest river that we've seen, 1956, of course, being the highest. People need to be prepared. One of the advantages in the river system is we do get lots of notice, and that's why the important meetings that are taking place around the region are important. Sandbagging is important. And I'm just encouraging people to do two things. If you're in and around the river, be very careful and very safe. We don't know what's below the surface level. The second thing is if you are living somewhere way away from the river, like Adelaide or in the southeast, travel to the Riverland and see it. It's probably once in a lifetime event, and the last thing the people of the river communities want is to see their tourism fall in a hole as well. It's very safe to still visit, and it's worth seeing. Trust me, there's more water than you can fly a rocket ship over. And it's river in its natural state. So you want to see it. You want to say, I was at Renmark or at Loxton or at Wakeree and I saw the high river in 2022.
Do they need to take into consideration, though, could there be any potential closures at, you know, shacks and caravan parks, things like that?
There's very limited inconvenience at the moment in certain areas. Yes, sure, shack owners on the water level and these things need to be very cautious, Jenny, but I think it's important that we understand that the river, particularly around the Riverland, we talk about floods, which is the right language, of course, but we've got floodplains. So the water is flooding on principally onto the floodplains. And like I said, there's very little inconvenience at this stage to average Riverlanders. That being said, there is, of course, issues around low-lying shacks and these things, but most people are taking the necessary precautions. Many of those shacks are built above the 56 flood level, or at least the capacity to manage up to the 56 flood level. And so I think we need to moderate our commentary around this. I don't want the media to rush to catastrophe. It's a significant event, but it's not one that's far-fetched nor fanciful or unforeseen. It's one we plan for. It's a reason why we don't build below the 56 floodplain for these very events.
My understanding from information from the SES is that more than 3,680 properties could be affecting, I'm sure, in the low-lying communities. Adrian Pederick, you were at a meeting on Wednesday in the Manham area. What did you learn from that meeting?
Well, I learned a lot, and it was so good to see the agencies presenting there right across the board, whether it's SES, whether it's the Environment Department, some very good information. Apart from the flow levels, I mean, they predicted, I think it was about 145 that night, and by the next day it was 165 gigalitres a day potentially coming down in a little while. But, look, I think it was reassuring. There was about 300 people there that heard the up-to-date information from all of the agencies. SA Water had their plans in place, what they're doing with the wastewater dam there at Manham Waters. They're going to raise the level of that by 900 mil and work with that. But they stress it's clean wastewater, and if for whatever reason there was an overbanking there, that water would be diluted at about 99.6%, because there's only about 74 megalitres there compared to the massive amount of water coming down. Look, obviously there's going to be some black water events, but look, as Tony said, it's a great time to visit the river at the moment, with all those floodplains being inundated. The environmental outcomes of this will be fantastic. Certainly we heard about shacks being cut off. There's a lot of power connections that are down in the potential high water zone. and so the sensible ramifications have to take place. But look, in the main, we're going to be a lot better than some places further east. We've had a lot more notice, and we just need to work with it. Once the water gets out to the lakes, we won't see a tremendous amount of high flows raising the level of the lakes, because what will happen as the gates are opened, and some people think the gates on the barrages can just be opened flat out. Well, that's a fallacy, because you've got to deal with high tides coming in from the seaside as well. But the beauty of it is the dredges have come out of commission after about 17 years, and those high flows will naturally scour out the river mouth and get rid of a lot of silt naturally and clean it out. But look, I'd urge people, get around it, have a good look at the river, be very, very careful about thinking about going water skiing on the river. Certainly go out on your boats, but just be careful. I mean, houseboats, there's a huge impact on houseboats, but we'll work with those communities. Look, it just goes without saying, we are the country of drought and flooding rains, and back between 2006, 2010, we had 4 years of that millennium drought, and now we're dealing with another natural issue with so much water coming down. And as we've seen by the unseasonal La Nina rain coming through, you get another 100 millimetres of rain throughout the system. Next thing, the estimates of what water's coming down rise again. Good to see so much work being done on levee banks and that kind of thing. And I'd urge people, only take the amount of sandbags you need. They are in short supply. There are more coming in. I was talking to Chris Beattie from the SES the other day. Please only take what you need.
Let's talk about the carp eradication plan in a moment. Adrian Pederick and Tony Passon with us to take us there. It's the Beach Boys. You're on 5MU, best songs of all time. With me in the studio right now is federal and state Liberal members Tony Passon and Adrian Pederick. The carp eradication plan. Tony Passon, you wanted to talk about this.
I do. It's time to end any further work in relation to this proposal. The reality here at Jenny is this is a great idea in theory. The idea that we could release a virus that would wipe out European carp in the river system. I mean, who wouldn't want to support that? But the reality is, and as this report seeks to allude to, yes, there's more work to be done, but I think we can rule it out now and stop wasting time, energy and effort, because there simply is too much biomass in the system to be able to remove that carp safely once we kill it using the virus. I mean, it's estimated that over 90% of the biomass in the river is European carp. Now, surely no one's suggesting that we can release this virus and remove that carp from the system efficiently. And we would need to do that. Anyone who's ever caught a carp, put it on the bank of the river and seen how quickly it rots and slimes up and goes rank. Imagine a river basically festooned with European carp rotting away, both on the top of and on the bottom of the river. It's a great idea, but one that's just impossible to implement. And I just think we're wasting time, money and energy on this endeavour, and I think we should move away from it. I was disappointed the report, as it should have, spoke a lot about, you know, risks to other fish species, etc. But I think I think there was more work that should have been done in the preliminary stages about how much biomass is in the river, how impractical it would be to get rid of it, and we should be kind of just accepting that this, whilst, you know, academically is a great idea, is an impossible logistical task, and we should move on and stop wasting our research dollar on it.
Do you have any thoughts on it, Adrian Pederick?
Look, certainly, and I met with the carpinator, Matt Bartwick. He was the initial researcher on this project about 6 years ago he started, and I had some real issues from early on with what we're trying to do here. I think, look, it was it's a good idea in theory, but in practice, and I remember saying to Matt all those years ago, I said, if you kill 90% of the carp in the river, you're going to need to hire every earth-moving contractor in South Australia and probably beyond, long-armed excavators, et cetera, to get them out. And, you know, he was suggesting, oh, some of it could be mixed up for meal. I said, you'll need 1,000 plants to do that, and you wouldn't have enough outcomes, because the issue is this was probably going to be a pretty quick-acting virus, and you would have to literally get probably hundreds of thousands of tonnes, if not millions of tonnes of carp out of the river system. So, look, I think we need to take another angle with this, as Tony is saying, and work forward. Look, a great idea, but the practical realities of it haven't been worked out in 6 years, and we probably should move on.
Right. Time to go to something completely different, maybe.
Yep.
Yep. And on a more positive note, you must be very pleased, both of you, about one of our beautiful towns making it as number one as the Ag Town of the Year in South Australia. Adrian?
Oh, look, absolutely. And it was great to be there the other Friday night with a former Mayor Brenton Lewis and incumbent Mayor Wayne Thorley and others getting that award. Didn't know it was coming, but it just shows how strong Maipalonga is, a community of about 500 people there, and the diversity of what happens at Maipalonga. Obviously, dairy, robotic dairy, we've got Lot 23. We've got people diversifying more in the apricot industry than what it used to be, bulk dried apricots back many years ago when I was a young lad growing up. And obviously the dry land farming sector that's there, but it also piggybacks onto the work they do in the primary school there, teaching the kids how to deal with money and run a business. And my full congratulations to the Maipalonga community. It's their second crack at it, and well done.
Mm. Yeah, it seems like there's a lot of innovation in that town.
Absolutely, absolutely. Mm. They do a great job, and Steve Hine and the rest of the community have done a magnificent effort. And it just shows you what community collaboration can do in really tough times like we've had with COVID in the last couple of years.
It's a slice of the Riverland in the Murraylands, Jenny. I've always thought that of Maipo. And to your listeners who might not have visited the town or who might live in the Adelaide Hills, take the opportunity to drive. It's a short distance to Maipo, and you'll get that Riverland experience so close to Adelaide.
Mm. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Tony Passon and Adrian Pederick. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Jenny.
Thank you very much.